After its world premiere at the Telluride Film Festival in September of last year, it opened to uniformly ecstatic reviews. And yet, like so many small films, it wasn't seen by all that many people, something which is now likely to change. Given the fact that the film Moonlight, directed by Barry Jenkins, has been nominated for 8 Academy Awards, including one for its haunting score. Setting of the Laudate Dominum by Mozart, some music from the Oscar-nominated score for the film Moonlight, music by Nicholas Britell. And he did that a number of times, you know, Mozart with the true foresight of genius, realizing how perfectly a piece of his would fit in a film, you know, centuries after his death.
Prescient isn't a strong enough word.
It isn't. I have to ask you, whose idea was it to include this?
Well, it's interesting. When I first met Barry, we met up actually in downtown L.A., and we had coffee, and coffee turned into some glass of wine, and we had this really amazing sort of wide-ranging conversation about music, films, life, everything. And after the conversation, I sent Barry a playlist of just some things that, you know, I was listening to, that I was inspired by, that just felt interesting as a point of conversation. And one of the pieces that I sent him was actually that Laudate Dominum. I thought it was such a transcendently beautiful piece. And in the course of some of the very early conversations that we were having, Barry absolutely fell in love with that piece. And it just shows how I think what's so beautiful about getting involved very early on in the process of a film is that you can have these sorts of conversations and you can really delve into ideas deeply. And that's kind of how it happened. So that's a recording that I conducted and made of the Mozart for the film. I think one of the most amazing things about film music is that really, I think you really never know what's going to work until you put it up against the picture. And no matter how fantastic an idea sounds on paper or even, you know, a piece of, you know, you could write an incredibly beautiful piece of music, but if it doesn't connect with the picture in a certain way, there's this kind of alchemy in the way that those things interact. And time is your ally when you have the time to talk to a director. And actually, in the case of Moonlight, one of the biggest things was early on when I was talking to Barry, you know, I said, I think it'd be really fantastic if we can spend a lot of time together and if you could actually come to my studio and we could sit together and explore this together. What was so awesome was Barry was absolutely into that. He was so excited to, so he would fly to New York. I live in Manhattan, and he would come to my studio, and we would spend days on end together. I would be playing him things, we'd be putting up ideas against the picture, and it's something very intangible with how that all connects. And I think when you're sitting with the director and you get a chance to, you know, you're hearing the same things, you know, you're looking at the same things, and you're feeling similar things, and then you can trust those feelings together, and,
sure,
and you find things.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So in other words, he's a director who really understands what music can do.
Absolutely. In a very profound way.
Yeah, which makes him, I don't want to say part of a minority. I mean, I once asked Randy Newman, I said, listen, are directors musically educable? And he started laughing as though I had just asked him if you could teach baboons how to speak Urdu. You know, it was on that level.
You know, what's interesting, I think music is something that is very difficult to talk about, right? I mean, and there's those famous quotes, you know, is it like talking about music is like dancing about architecture, right? There's
exactly.
These types of things. But what I think is, what I've found is really so helpful in the process is it's not about musical terminology. You know, it doesn't matter if we're talking about this is an allegro in G minor. That, you know, that might be true, but that's not going to help us figure something out in a film. What's going to figure something out is saying, you know, what do we need to feel here? What do we want the music to enhance what's on the screen? Do we actually want the music to be in counterpoint? So maybe we're going in a different direction. We're saying something that isn't on the screen. Those kind of conversations, I think, where you approach it almost from a perspective of storytelling and you're saying and feeling. Really, I mean, I think I go back to that a lot because so much of it is, I think, with the music, you're saying, you know, how are we supposed to feel at this moment? So
precisely, precisely. Well, someone who's obviously figured that out is Nicholas Britell, who just got an Oscar nomination for his score for Moonlight. Nicholas Britell, welcome to KUSC.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored to be here.
I have to say, it's one of the most intimate scores in years. It is this small, which is not to say tiny. I mean, small in the sense of you ask a small group of instruments to do a lot of things, and they carry a huge amount of weight throughout the movie. And it's one of these miraculous things. It works.
Thank you so much. I think what was really important for me early on, like we were saying about getting involved early, when I read the screenplay, the first word that came to me was poetry. The screenplay, well, there was this intimacy, this tenderness, this sensitivity in that. And what was so remarkable was the way in which Barry was able to fully bring that to life in the film itself. The film has, you know, even furthered those feelings. And because of that early sense that I had of that poetry and that feeling, I was thinking right away of what is the musical analog of that? How do we translate that same feeling that I had of this tenderness, of this sensitivity into musical terms? It was very important that the music have some of that character. And interestingly, among the first things I sent to Barry, I was really channeling this idea of poetry, and I wrote a piece called Piano and Violin Poem. I actually called it that.
Excellent.
And I sent it to Barry, and he really loved it, and that piece is actually Little's theme.
Well, I don't know this for certain, but I don't think it's a technique that Erich Wolfgang Korngold and Max Steiner and Franz Waxman developed. I may be wrong. So tell me about Chopped and Screwed.
Yes. So Chopped and Screwed is a style of Southern hip hop where you take tracks, you take an audio recording, and you slow it down. And in the process of slowing it down, the pitch goes down. And what results isn't just a lower tones. You actually get a deepening and an enriching of the sonic character of the music. And one of the really fascinating things that you discover is all sorts of, you know, when the sounds are stretched out and deepened, you actually see internal harmonics that you never noticed. The whole texture changes. And early on in our conversations, Barry told me how much he loved Chopped and Screwed music.
We should actually say, I don't know if we have, who Barry is.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Barry Jenkins, the amazing director of Moonlight, who, you know, I've been lucky enough to get the chance to collaborate with. And, you know, these conversations that we had were really so important in the sense of helping determine the musical direction and character we followed. It was in these early conversations we started saying, well, you know, what if we did that to the score? What if I wrote pieces of music with real instruments, fully recorded pieces of music, and then as a second part of our process, what if I started applying some of these audio techniques to it and started bending the sounds and slowing things and experimenting? And we just dove into it. And again, what's so interesting is that's the type of idea where it's so exciting to explore, but you really have no idea if it's going to work. You just don't. I think on paper it sounds interesting, but that's something that we could have tried it and we could have put it up against the picture and it could have been like, wow, that is not for Moonlight. It doesn't work. What was so exhilarating was that it did work. And we had, for example, Little's theme in the beginning of the film, and then I started exploring ways of slowing it, of pitching it down, of taking elements of it and slowing those down, of bending certain instruments, you know, so a violin starts sounding deeper, it starts sounding like a cello or even a bass at times. And it was almost kind of miraculous how it felt like it was part of the film. And there were certain scenes in particular where some of this morphing of the sound really opened things up. An interesting example was the scene with Schoolyard Fight. There's a track, Knock Down, Stay Down, where I took Little's theme, and at that point in chapter two, it's we call it Chiron's theme because it's already lower and deeper. And I'd taken this track and I slowed it so far down that the audio actually is pitched over two octaves down. And when you hear it, it actually is almost kind of like a rumbling. In the theater, it feels just like there's a sort of rumbling in the subwoofers. And occasionally you notice something which almost sounds like a bell, possibly. And then you hear something which definitely sounds like a double bass. And what was amazing was that thing that sounds kind of like a bell is actually the piano from Little's theme, and that thing which is the bass is the violin from Little's theme.
There you go. There you go.
And that was this really, I mean, we were, it sort of blew our own minds.
Yeah, and it also adds a slightly surrealistic tinge.
Yes.
Because the movie itself, while you know, very stark and realistic, it also has that edge of unbelievability. I mean, not in the sense that I'm not buying this story, in the sense that are such things really happening these days?
Right, and there are elements, absolutely, there are elements of really getting into how things feel and into the way in which we perceive things, I think. You know, there's an incredibly beautiful use of color in the film that Barry and that James Laxton, the incredible cinematographer, you know, explored. There are moments where I think you're not just seeing what happened, but you're actually experiencing a bit of how Little might have felt and what he was seeing in his own mind. And I think that there are definitely times where certainly the visual elements and the music can interplay so you get a sense of those things without actually just purely seeing them as real.
Oh, precisely. Precisely. And you're too modest to say it, but that's what film music has always done. It's told the audience what the characters are really feeling. Now, listening to the score, can I safely assume you really like Bach and Vivaldi?
I do love Bach. I certainly love Vivaldi. Bach is has always been someone that I'm almost, I think, mystified by Bach to a certain extent, because I think there are certain composers where you can imagine how they might have done what they did. You know, you can picture the sort of some of the thought process that might have gone into developing ideas a certain way. But one of the things with Bach is that I feel it's almost incomprehensible how he did what he did.
Sure, sure. A, with all those kids.
Yeah, the practical realities of his
Yeah,
life.
And
yeah.
B, you know, the fact that maybe we have maybe a third of everything he wrote. The rest of it lost, destroyed, given
Absolutely.
Away.
And actually, I remember reading a really beautiful biography of Mozart, actually, and it talks about how, you know, I had never quite realized that, you know, at that time, Bach's music, it's not like today where everything is accessible. There were many composers who actually didn't really know or come into contact with J.S. Bach's music. I mean, Mozart was in, you know, was very familiar, you know, obviously with the music of J.C. Bach, for example. But it's amazing to study the ways in which Bach's music affected the thought process of other composers.
Oh,
too.
Absolutely.
Like Mozart supposedly had almost like a crisis of confidence when he first really dealt with Bach.
Sure. And Bach, even during his lifetime, was considered this, you know, hopelessly out-of-date fuddy-duddy.
Right, it's amazing to me that when you explore the reaches of Bach's music, it's not just the range, but I mean the how prolific, and to think that we're not even seeing all of his music.
Absolutely.
But each piece, I mean, again, each piece is such a magnificent masterwork.
Yeah. Of course, the reason I ask, I mean, there are cues in which, you know, the spirit of Bach does seem to hover over things. Although the composer that the score reminds me most of, not in any organizational sense or in any thing other than the most basic way it functions, mm-hmm. is Anton Webern.
Oh,
in the sense that there are these little flecks of things that just come out and then disappear, and everything is so precise and so absolutely meticulous.
Well, thank you. I think one of the things that I think about a lot in writing music is also there's a sort of, I think, kind of complexity of the soundscape that I'm always exploring, because I know for my ears, something that I'm attracted to is when your ear isn't always sure exactly what it's hearing at every moment. And there's something about, I think it's almost like the way that our brains experience sound, that when there's a variability in the texture, literally the texture of the audio, there's something that I just think draws you in a bit. So, for example, like, there are moments in these pieces where I am trying very consciously to have elements enter and exit and sounds too. You know, a lot of the textures of even the recordings, the way in which the violin sounds, the ways in which some, for example, like in the Metrorail closing cue, the way in which some of the orchestral timbres appear and disappear is all something that I think is, you know, it's sort of the way that that breathes is part and parcel of the piece itself.
Yeah. So. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm very fascinated by musical genre, and something that I've always thought about is in different genres over many centuries, there are sometimes musical stylistic techniques or devices or ideas that are so incredibly beautiful, and yet which for some reason don't necessarily recur later on in later genres. And for me, I sometimes ask myself the question, you know, for example, in Moonlight, I love the sound of virtuosic violin arpeggiations. It's something that just deeply moves me. And is a technique or a sound that, why couldn't that still be utilized, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Why not?
I mean, and there are harmonies, you know, different genre is an interesting thing because each genre, you know, there's sort of a DNA to different genres. And it's always interesting to see, actually, sometimes very subtle changes can produce a different genre. And it doesn't take much. You know, sometimes just a subtle change in a rhythm will transition you from ragtime to jazz. You know, a subtle change in a harmony will transition you from classical music to Argentine tango. You know, it's very subtle things that happen. And it's always interesting to see what those, you know, idiosyncratic elements are in each genre.
Exactly. And why should any film composer be hesitant to do anything they feel like, given the fact it's this constantly evolving thing that started by, understandably, mimicking late 19th century European orchestral music? Max Steiner was the godson of Richard Strauss, and he studied with Mahler.
Absolutely.
And then Dave Raxon comes along and says, wait a minute, how about some jazz? And it was a huge revolution.
Absolutely. And I often think that the sound of Hollywood, actually, in the 1940s and, let's say, 40s and 50s, that sound is actually kind of the continuing tradition of Viennese music. You know, it is the, you know, these emigre composers who come to Hollywood, and it actually, in many ways, it's even among the same people and families. So American music in that sense is this sort of beautiful extension of late 19th century German Romanticism.
Actually. Oh, absolutely. So this little picture initially sort of slipped under the radar for some reason, and it's right up there in front of the radar now. Well, it's pretty obviously.
No, it's been very surreal and just utterly mind-blowing, what's happened with the film and how many people have been able to experience it now. You know, I think when we're working on it, the dream is that people, you know, you're making something like this, you want people to experience it, and you want to share it with people, and the opportunity that the film now has to reach people is something that is, you know, it makes us all very happy.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the single most astounding thing about the score, if you don't mind my saying so, except for the two songs, it would be very difficult to infer, if you just listen to the music, what the picture is about, in the sense that it's a picture about a young African-American guy who goes through various stages of life, often horrific things happening to this kid. And the score has this oddly disjunctive sense of that until you realize, no, it doesn't. It's not talking about this specific story, this specific tragedy. It's elevating it to a level that is so far beyond what's actually happening that it becomes, I don't want to say Shakespearean and Greek tragedy, but it does. You know what I mean?
No, and it's interesting. You know, I think from our perspective, early on, we really wanted to follow our feelings and the sense of, for me, getting inside of Little's, you know, the character of Chiron, his POV, like, what is the depths of feeling and thought that he's having? And how can music kind of bring us into his world? And absolutely, one of the ways in which we did that through the music was exploring actually a pretty wide range of things, you know, everything from the subtle kinds of feelings in something like Little's theme to things like the piece The Middle of the World in the swimming sequence, where that's a moment where actually it's not under the surface at all. It's actually this really sort of soaring kind of a violin concerto-like texture. And what was so fantastic was getting to work with director Barry Jenkins on that, because he was so open to this wide range of possibilities and encouraged that. He was so excited to see what music could do in certain places. And it's similarly, there were places where we really decided to ourselves, you know what? It's important that there isn't music here. And that's something I think about a lot, which is, you know, it's not just where does music go, it's also where doesn't music go.
Precisely.
And there are places like towards the end of the film where I'm so moved by those scenes where it's just two people sitting looking at each other in silence. And those moments, I think, are so profound. And music has no place at that moment. You know, music can then come in after and say something, but in those moments, it's actually the world of the characters is the score.
Yeah. Well, it's a terrific score. I'm obviously not the first one to point that out. The Oscar-nominated score for Moonlight, music by Nicholas Britell. And if this is not too personal a question, have you bought your tux yet? Or
I have a tux.
Oh, you have a tux. Okay, that's great. That's great. Well, hold on to it, because if this is any indication, this is not going to be the last time you're going to have to use it.
Well, thank you very much.
Nicholas Britell, thanks for stopping in tonight.
Thank you so much. So great to talk to you.